Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner. I'm here this hour with Dr. Lester Spence. We'll talk about what we'll talk about when we get back from seeing what's happening on the roads around Baltimore City and its environs. Make sure you all get home safe. Then we'll come back. And Lester has some interesting looks on what just happened the last couple of days, but also what its effect is on black leadership, on black America, and more than the different kind of outfall from Osama and Obama. So stay with us. We'll be right back. Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland Parkinson's Disease and Movement Disorder Center, providing clinical research trials that evaluate new therapies and the latest treatment options, including surgical intervention for advanced stages of disease. The number for more information is 1-800-492-5538, and that information is at steinershow.org. Click on the University of Maryland Medical Center's banner, and you can read more about all the things they do down there. We are joined in studio here by Dr. Lester Spence, who is an associate professor?
Assistant
professor,
yeah,
of political science at Johns Hopkins University. Blogs at Blacksmith, SMYTHE.com. And the new book?
Staring in the Darkness, The Limits of Hip-Hop and Black Politics.
Staring in the Darkness. I love that title. I can't wait for it to really come out.
Rakim, baby. Eric B. and Rakim.
And the number here is 410-319-8888. I'll remind you as we get into this conversation that tomorrow night, Dr. Lester Spence, Dr. Michael Eric Dyson, law professor Sherilyn Eiffel, and I will be at...
And Melissa Harris-Perry.
Melissa Harris-Perry, mm-hmm. Also law professor and writer and commentator, will be joining us at the Enoch Pratt Free Library at 7 p.m. to talk about the new very... to honor Manny Marable, but also talk about the very controversial book that Manny Marable wrote that was published just days, really, before he died,
yeah.
suddenly, on Malcolm X. It's a very controversial book. We have a live panel. We're looking forward to all of you coming down to join this discussion. It could get intense, but we'll keep it polite and talk about what all this means. He was going to be here. Manny Marable was scheduled to be at the Enoch Pratt Library tomorrow night at 7 o'clock to talk about his book. Then he passed away suddenly,
yeah. And
we decided to, as a member of the library board, I suggested that we continue the discussion and invite some interesting guests to come on to talk about the book and with all of us out there. So please join us tomorrow night at 7 o'clock at the Enoch Pratt Library. It's going to be taped by C-SPAN, so it'll also be on television, as well as we're going to tape it for airing here on WEAA. As well, so and around and offer to other public radio stations. So, but join us here 7 o'clock tomorrow night as we discuss Manny Marable's very controversial new book on Malcolm X. All right, Lester Spence, 410-319-8888 is the number here. So sometimes we have a panel, and sometimes we have you on by yourself. And here you are all by yourself.
Yeah, yeah. We'll figure out how to make it do what it do.
We can. Right? I'm not worried about that. So, talk a bit about what you've been thinking. What's been on your mind with President Obama,
yeah,
the assassination of Osama bin Laden, the killing of Osama bin Laden, and this combining with this notion of black leadership and what it says to black America.
So, if you think back just a week ago. Maybe a little bit more than a week, President Obama had finally made the decision after consultation to release or try to get the state of Hawaii to release his long-form birth certificate, right, in hopes that releasing the birth certificate would reduce the call of the birthers, you know, led at that moment by Donald Trump, right? And it was just a few days ago where he appeared at the what's called the Nerd Prom. What's the technical name for it? The press, you know, Obama's.
Oh, Mark.
Yeah, they call it the press, the Nerd Prom, but the press thing, the press joint.
Yes, the annual press, the White House press dinner.
Yeah, the annual White. So, and Obama takes the opportunity to just go off. I mean, straight up go off on Donald Trump and a number of other of his critics. Right. And
there's this correspondence dinner.
Yeah, the correspondence dinner. Yeah. So there's this moment, right, where a number of his supporters, primarily African-American, are really rallying around him for righteous reasons, because the birther movement is incredibly racist. The idea that Obama is not is not a citizen is driven solely by racism and then connected to another political agenda. So we're rallying around him, right? The moment he's probably giving that speech at the correspondence dinner, he knows that he's in the middle of planning to take to assassinate Osama, right? So that just the next day, and I knew that there was this, that he had a press conference planned for Sunday evening, and the subject was unknown. But I've had a lot of stuff I've been working through, so I just missed the press conference. Next day, I get the I'm talking to a friend of mine. And my friend is like, "Oh my God, this news is incredible!" I'm like, "What did I miss? What am I miss?" And she says, "Obama killed Osama." Right? So I go on Facebook, and all my friends, a number of my African-American friends, are like doing the equivalent of popping their collars. Like, what? You know, like, this is a moment where you have to recognize that Obama is the president. Right? He is the president, and there's no way you can trip on him because he's not somehow presidential enough. You cannot question his presidential authority here. Right. And my first response is first one of resignation, because I knew that, you know, when 9/11 happened, that whoever was responsible was calling something upon their heads that they had no idea, you know, what would be the end result of. Right. So part of it is resignation. But then the other part of it is like, OK, well, what's the black unemployment rate? You know, I know a number of people who have undergone or are going through foreclosure as we speak. And President Obama hasn't spoken to that issue in a significant amount of time, right? So at the same time that a number of people are rallying around the president to fight, to respond to a racist act to delegitimate him, right? Black people are undergoing significant stress and anxiety in this moment. And so I'm trying to reconcile them both, right? So I think that this moment is incredibly important because what we're living under, this is yet another example of where it's very, very difficult to be a progressive and to be black and to speak against the president. And because at the same time we do that, one argument is that it gives racists further reason to claim him being illegitimate, right? So I'm trying to wrestle with all of these things. Now, how it relates to black leadership is one of the things that we struggle with is creating mechanisms of accountability that give black people who are suffering the ability to say, to request of that, of people who they've elected to represent them, to request that they fight for them, right? So that's what I've been really thinking about. I think that's one of the critical questions of the 21st century, really, as far as Americans are concerned.
410-319-8888. Bring your thoughts to the airwaves here in response to what Lester Spence is talking about, professor of political science at Johns Hopkins. 410-319-8888. So what are we suggesting here? I mean, because it's very complex. I sent you the piece that Kai Wright wrote on color lines when he wrote this piece called "The Ability to Kill Osama Bin Laden Does Not Make America Great," and he starts pointing out all the. He says it's perverse that President Obama is writing as a black man that is leader of a nation in which justice is but a distant dream for millions of residents. He leads a nation that can afford billions annually for war but can't feed the nearly 18 million children who lived in homes without food security in 2009. And yet the Nobel Prize winner can fix his mouth to say that killing a man on the other side of the globe provides proof of America's exceptionalism.
Yes.
Now that's
– Yeah. Yeah, that's speaking truth of power, right? I mean, you don't get any better than that.
So – Then again, and he talks about the 14% of poverty, unemployment rate in the African American world, infant mortality, 14%, almost 14.5% of the people living in poverty, spiraling upwards, and one out of four black and Latino families living below the poverty line.
One out of four black men will be subject to the prison industrial complex before they die. Right? I mean, the statistics go on and on.
So, So these contradictions exist, but let me just read you now what Ethelbert Miller, who's been writing a lot to me lately about these things.
Yeah.
Ethelbert Miller is an African-American, one of America's leading poets.
Brilliant.
A brilliant poet, a teacher at Howard University, and president of the chairman of the board of the Institute for Policy Studies, which is a progressive left-wing think tank in Washington, D.C., that also has African-American leadership. And he wrote this thing today that he said, race gets in my eyes. There's a picture of Obama with a cigarette smoke and an ashtray because, you know, he's still supposed to like his cigarettes. Tough one to beat, cigarettes. And he writes, why do we think President Obama should be different from any other president? I love President Carter because of his emphasis on human rights. Do people remember this? I spent the last 2 days, in private and public, with the writer Alice Walker. I've always admired her. It was my love for June Jordan that connected us. But Alice said something yesterday that was disappointing. In response to a question from a fan reader, she said she hoped Obama wouldn't run again. Her comments had, quote-unquote, smoke around them. She made the reference to Obama's health. I had been thinking about this, too. Might Obama be living his own Jackie Robinson story? What is the impact of a stress on a black man? Failure to make it past the fifth inning? Still, I think Obama knows the importance of history and what he's doing. One does not trade the presidency for a long life on a stoop or porch. Maybe Obama's grandchildren might have to read about him in history books. Our focus should not simply be on giving Obama 4 more years, but also changing some of those in Congress. Local elections are just as important as national ones. Strong support for Obama in 2012 could sweep out some of the tea that's been brewing in Congress. Asking or wishing that Obama not run represents a progressive politics without a head. It concedes power to the right. It's an outgrowth of a naive way of looking at the world. What did people expect when they voted for Obama? A civil rights leader? A black man with a black agenda? Did they think that he would have to fight? Did they think he would not have to fight wars or combat terrorism? Hey, what did the oath say that he took twice? Being president these days is just as difficult as being black. Is that two strikes against Obama? Is that two strikes against Obama? What game are we playing anyway?
Ethelbert is brilliant, but I would suggest a couple of things. First, it's not, we hold Obama up to the standard. There are two standards that I hold Obama up to. One is the black standard, right? The black standard with a capital B, right? That's unerringly straight up 90-degree angle. What have the best of African American thinkers, intellectuals? What standard is that? Right. So that suggests one thing. But on top of that, or along with that, I'm holding him up to his own standard. Right. When he talks about the importance of change, where he talks about dealing with poverty. Right. Those are my desires. But that comes from him. That comes from him running for office, right? So both the best of African-American culture and politics and Obama himself suggest that at the very least, he should be using the bully pulpit to speak to the least of these. That's the first thing. The second is, while I would agree, I wouldn't say that I hope he doesn't run, but I also wouldn't say that he's going to deal with more stress than, say, Bill Clinton does. I mean, he still is the president. He is African American. He gets different stress because he's the first black president. But I mean, Bill Clinton went from brown hair to like straight up gray by the time he was in office. I mean, I expect Obama to go through the same thing, but he'll live through it, right?
Well,
I don't.
Well, I have kind of a little pushback on that. Let me ask some questions. But first, let me go to the phones. I'll come back.
Okay.
Let people join us because people are calling in. I want to give them a chance while they're not making wait too long.
No, that's right.
410-319-8888. Your thoughts on President Barack Obama, the assassination of Osama, and what it says about what we're not doing in America. And I'll pause this question. I'll pause it earlier. I mean, we're talking about President Barack Obama as a black president or as a president who is a black man.
Oh, I got – yeah.
410-319-8888. Clarence, you're on the air.
What street is it on?
No, we're going to make a left.
Clarence, you're on the air. Hey, Clarence, you there? Hold on, and we'll come. Let Clarence hold on. We'll go to the next caller. Don't hang up on him. He's just giving directions, and we'll come
That's
right back to
him.
That's
what I'm talking about. I love this show. This is dope.
Joseph from Woodstock, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
I wanted to know, what do you and, I guess, more directly, Dr. Spence, think that, how much do the limits of representational democracy contribute to the shortcomings that are aptly described by progressives? It seems that rather than just focusing on what the individual is doing or not doing or their shortcomings as a leader or an executive, how much is it just the process of representational democracy versus like a fully participatory democracy where citizens are actually making inputs and deciding maybe like on a style of California with the various referendums that they put forth?
Yeah, so I mean, that's an excellent question. And I think that that representational democracy does represent some hurdles that are fairly significant, particularly in a two-party system, right? So so in the best-case scenario, what we'd be talking about isn't Obama necessarily. We'd be organizing around some issue. Like, for example, I believe that that post-secondary education should be paid for by the government, right? So we'd organize around that issue, and then we'd find somebody to run and support it. Or we'd mobilize so much support for that issue that it doesn't matter who's in office because either the Democrat or the Republican would have to support it. Kind of like the way that Social Security works now, where you'd face significant problems running against Social Security even if you're a Republican, right? But the problem is that given how far to the right our politics are skewed, it's incredibly difficult to muster the resources to get the person in to get that on the agenda without getting someone in office. And then once that person's in office and they become the mouthpiece for that, then the challenge becomes, how do we get that person to do what we want them to do, given that they're already in office? So yes, it provides an incredible set of challenges that makes it even more difficult than if we had a participatory democracy, which would itself have its own hurdles.
Joseph, you got that? Is Joseph still there? Yeah? Go on. I'm sorry.
That was an excellent response. Go ahead. I appreciated that. And I think that's where I find the shortcomings, or rather the criticisms, aren't directly related to that. It seems more criticisms, not saying that the Dr. Spence hasn't put it out there what I perceive to be a cogent fashion, but it just seems that what I hear from, say, the MoveOn.orgs and other people, who, like even Matt Damon, and the other night,
Obama.
President Obama made a reference to Matt Damon. That's the kind of criticisms that I hear, people like who are basically crying tears of betrayal and not really dealing with politics in a clear-eyed, cold-blooded, surgical fashion, where brutal choices have to be made and valuable objects have to be put aside for other values that may be greater, or other goals or objectives that might be more feasible in the long term. You know, that's what I haven't been hearing enough of, and that's where I think the shortcomings have been in with the criticism with reference to the president.
Right. Yeah. So what I've been trying to do when I have these conversations and I talk about this, to an extent I am saying, well, listen, Obama should be held to a certain standard, right? But and to the extent that if he were to listen, I would be like, Obama, you need to do this, this, this. But what I'm really interested in is doing is talking to people who I believe I'm further to the left of them, but they at least are closer to me than they are to the right. To get black people who I believe share some of my politics to say, listen, we need to be about a different set of politics than what we are. And I think the first step for me is saying, like, listen, this person we've elected, we have a, you know, he has a certain responsibility to us, and we can't just, you know, support him just because Donald Trump, you know, basically moves against him in a racist fashion.
Joseph, thanks so much. And who's the us?
I'm sorry.
Who's the us?
Repeat my sentence back to me.
President Obama has to support us.
Oh, people who voted for him, right? People who voted for him, people who donated money, people who, you know, wore his T-shirts, people who really who waited in those lines for like several hours. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Joseph. 410-319-8888. Clarence, you're on the air.
Good afternoon.
We got you. There you go. Welcome.
You get those directions, Clarence?
Yeah. I'm sorry, gentlemen.
That's okay, man. It's all right. It's all right.
Dr. Spence, I'd like to ask a question of you, sir.
Yeah.
As for speaking for myself, when I turned on the TV set and I heard the announcement about Bin Laden's death, I felt no jubilation. It was more almost the same sadness that I felt at 9/11 because it was just death to me.
Yeah.
Senseless, useless death. What, in your opinion, what does that say about the psyche of a society when, even though as this man did something horrible to us, that kind of jubilation would usually be reserved for the end of, the complete end of killing, not just that particular incident. Do you have a comment on that, sir?
Yeah, what I would say is a couple of things. I think those feelings are a little bit, I think our feelings are a little bit more complex than perhaps either of us. I mean, because I had the same feeling you did, and then I talked to a couple of students last night on campus, on Hopkins campus, and they had the same feeling that you and I did. But reflecting on it a little bit more, I think our feelings are a little bit more complex than that, just captured in a moment, first of all. And I think that there's I got this from Ta-Nehisi Coates, a Baltimore native, excellent writer. And
amazing
what he said
writer is,
he said it far better than what I'm going to say. He said, basically, I'm not going to trip on 25-year-old, on how a 25-year-old expresses themselves in a given moment, right? Because 25-year-olds, apologies to all 25-year-olds listening. 25-year-olds are like kids, right? So I think there is a really deep nationalist streak that we have that's incredibly problematic, right? And when somebody talks about preserving our way of life and you attach that nationalist streak to it, you're not talking about the principles of democracy in most cases. What you're really talking about is making sure we get our stuff and nobody else gets theirs, right? But at the same time, there are far more of us, you know, who are reflecting on this moment and saying, no, death, and they're either saying, well, listen, this death was something that had to happen, but I'm not going to be joyful about it, or they really are straight up, and I say this in the best way, peaceniks, where they're like, no, death itself shouldn't be celebrated in any form or fashion. I think that that America has a wide range of viewpoints on this, and we shouldn't necessarily rely on Twitter to state what those viewpoints are.
Yeah, let me go to the phone, too. I'm going to reserve some stuff for a minute to get our callers back in here. 410-319-8888. Rodney, you're on the air.
Hi, good evening, gentlemen. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
I have one comment, one question. My comment is I'm not crying tears over the death of the Nazi spirit. I'm not jumping up and down and celebrating, but I'm not crying tears over him.
Yeah.
But my question I have goes to your guest. We're talking about the US. Because what I get tired of is the criticism of the president, but I don't see the criticism of the Democrats who don't support the president. I keep reminding people, we do not live in a dictatorship. President Obama cannot do a Yul Brynner and say, let it be written, let it be done. It happens. There is a great compromise that has to occur. With the Republicans, I find it so interesting, Republicans, they stand lock, stock, boom. They lock their heels, and they're going to support their leader. come hell or high water, the Democrats, I don't hear a thing called red dog Republican, but you got blue dog Democrat, same as the Dixiecrats you had in the 60s. Mm-hmm. And I just find it so interesting that there's such criticism of him, but I don't see the criticism of those Democrats who fail to support him. And if we had that equal criticism, maybe he would be able to get those other things we want accomplished, because the Democrats would see that those who voted for President Obama also voted for them, and you don't support the president, you're out of office. And that's a big issue that I have. I would often wonder how many independents are former Democrats versus how many independents are former Republicans, because I put myself in the independent category now, because I'm just sick of the way that the Democrats move and the so-called supporters, how they just, they're not there.
I'll take the second question first really quickly. Most of the data I'm aware of suggests that people, when people say they're independent, what that really means is they vote for one party or they stay home. You know, very rarely do the number of people who are truly, quote unquote, independent, that is, they vote for Republican one time, then they vote maybe for the Democrat the next, and Republican again, is very, very, very small. Right. So that's the first question. The second is, the challenge here is, I understand what you're saying, and there are a number of Democrats who vote, you know, so in the Senate, like Lieberman was the best example of somebody like what you're talking about. Right. And maybe somebody like the former quarterback. Is it Heath Shuler?
Shuler.
Yeah.
He's from North Carolina.
Yeah.
North Carolina.
Yeah. Real conservative Democrat, right? Votes with Republicans in a number of different ways. They exist and they're problematic. But is the question I'd have is, what is it that Obama's supported that's been progressive, you know, other than the health care thing, which is a kind of important. What has he supported that's been progressive that he got undercut by the Democrats on? Right. I mean, so it was, you know, he very rarely used the bully pulpit to speak to issues of, for example, dealing with the Bush tax cut on the wealthy. He did that like after the fact. Right. Where he didn't even speak and say, listen, I don't support this. This is what's going to happen, but these are the consequences of what's happening. This is why I'm not supporting it. I don't think it's American. I don't think that the wealthy should be able to basically get off scot-free. I think they should be responsible, right? I mean, that's a really clear narrative, and you can make it even clearer than what I'm saying it, that he never said, and when he doesn't speak from the top, it becomes very easy for a Democrat at the bottom to go against the grain.
There's all these questions we're raising here. I mean, the question of independent voters is an interesting one, who they really are. It's really hard to say who they are. I mean, there's a large body of them who are Republicans, who a lot of people just don't want to be in any party at all, you know.
But when push comes to shove, they vote, right? I mean, those who vote, right? So what we do, we ask two questions. We ask, are you Democrat, Republican, or independent, right? And then the second question after that is, if you're independent, who do you tend to vote for, right? Do you lean one way or the other? And very rarely do you get a person, at least in public opinion data, says, you know what, I'm just in the middle. That is somebody who actually votes. Most people vote one way or the other if they vote.
There is this, body of voters, though, who moves back and forth. That's called the squishy vote for Obama that happened. And I think that's there is this swing vote that can go either way in America, and what that number is, I think that a lot of people just feel that there are a lot of people who identify more with being fed up, that 37% or whatever is just fed up with wanting to be identified.
Yeah,
they're just fed up with where politics is.
Yeah, I tend to look at that as a mobilization issue. It's not necessarily a – so I don't look at – so what you're saying is that there's something akin to the Reagan Democrats, right?
Well, maybe. But I mean we need to go to break here. When we come back, I mean, we're going to go to LaMontia's next caller up. And the question is I posit earlier about who Obama is supposed to be. Is he supposed to be – a black president or a president who is black.
Yeah, yeah.
And maybe I'll posit here that one of the reasons he's going to win in 2012 is because he is black.
Yeah.
And I'll come back with that when we come back. And we'll see what we think about that. 410-319-8880 is number. Lamont, you're the next caller up. We'll take your call when we come back from this break. Stay with us. Hello, I'm Mark Steiner. Welcome back. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland State Mortgage Late Don't Wait program. For more information and personal counseling, the number is 1-877-462-7555. We're here with Dr. Lester Spence, Assistant Professor of Political Science at Johns Hopkins University. We're talking about – what are we talking about? Lots of stuff here. We're talking about President Barack Obama, the assassination of Osama bin Laden, the fallout in America – and the question we just raised a moment ago, and we're looking at what's, you know, we spend trillions of dollars in these wars around the world, yet unemployment is high. Yeah. The African-American community is in crisis, 14.5% unemployment in the African-American world. The majority of many of the mortgages being lost in this country, 14 million, are in the black and Latino communities. So where are we? 410-319-8888. Before we answer the questions I asked, I'm going to get you all to think about this. Lamont, you're in Baltimore. I mean, you are in Baltimore, Lamont. I mean, you're on the air. Welcome.
I think as far as bin Laden, I was really proud that Obama was the one who got him, President Obama. I do believe in the death penalty, so I have absolutely no problem with him being killed in the manner in which he was. I think he should have been gotten a long time ago. You asked the question, is Barack Obama a black president or a president who happens to be black? I think that's how you phrased it. But, let me tell you my history. I voted for Bush twice, and I voted for Barack Obama, and I'll probably vote for him again. I don't care about party. I care less about liberal Democrat. I just want somebody who has a good idea, who I believe at that time can make a difference. I don't have any loyalty. I think the issue with Barack Obama that he's been able to handle so well, at least in my opinion, is that African Americans put so much pressure on him because he is black, as if he has this magic wand that he can change the conditions overnight. He's only been in office for 2 years, and the problems that are faced not only in the black community but the United States as a whole were created more than. For a long while, it was festering and imploded. So to expect that he's going to come into office and make this great change in our community is really not realistic. And the truth of the matter is that I don't think it's a matter of conservative ideology or conservative principles or progressive or anything like that. Most of the country, we're kind of down the middle. And the reality is what it takes to get this country working is a little bit comes from both sides. To punish the wealthy, you're not going to create jobs. But in the same breath, by not holding them accountable, you hurt the middle class and you hurt ultimately the poor. So you have to find that middle ground. But people want him to be one side or the other, and he's done a great job. I criticize him a lot, but he's done a great job in handling that pressure, and that's why I support him. I mean, I still criticize him, but I support him overall.
I would push you in a couple of different ways. So it's not, quote unquote, the black community who heavily criticized Obama. It's really people like me, right? And I am African American. I am black, but I'm not the black community, right? So if we judge it by public opinion polls, black communities still the black communities, black populations, plural, still support him significantly in like large numbers. So we're not talking about the black communities being black populations being critical. We're talking about basically black progressives such as myself being critical, right? And in part, we're not just being critical about Obama. To a certain extent, we're pushing the black populations that we consider ourselves members of to be more critical. So that's the first thing. The second thing is that it's not about a middle line approach, right? It's if you look at wealth inequality, and I've talked about this in a couple of speeches I've given lately, wealth inequality from 1929 to the present has the shape of a U. It's really, really high in 1929. is really, really, really high now, and it dips like it's at its lowest point somewhere in around the 50s. That is the consequence of progressive political organizing. There is no conservative policy, no conservative platform, no Republican policy in the present, no Southern Democrat policy going back to the 50s that ameliorated wealth inequality. Wealth inequality produces significant stress and anxiety. It reduces productivity. It reduces the quality of life for everybody, not just black people. It even reduces the quality of life for the wealthy. So it's not about this left thing, right thing, let's split the middle, right? Now, what is his responsibility there? Now, his responsibility, his options are truncated because the Republicans run the House, right? And there are a significant number of moderate Democrats in the Senate, right? So what power does he have? He still has the power of the executive order. He still has the power of the bully pulpit. Now, one of the things I neglected to mention when I was talking about standards, it was Obama who said that his goal was to be transformative like Reagan. Reagan changed how we viewed government. After Reagan was elected, after Reagan was in office, we viewed, well, not we, but many of us viewed government as the problem. When Obama himself says Reagan is his model, that Reagan is his standard, what that suggests to me is he understands his role is to tell us that government matters again, right? That government can be used in a progressive way to ameliorate suffering, just like it did in the 50s, or at least for a number of the population.
I mean, Lamont, thanks for the call. We're going to go to Michael next and then to Hank. The issue is this is a very different America, the landscape we have right now. I mean, there's been an interesting article that was in Harper's this week. And the article was about how Naval War College, how the country now responds to the military rather than the military responding to civilian power. It's calling the shots. Oh, it's saying where the power is. Petraeus is out there talking this stuff. When you have the intelligence forces and the military forces combining, we're in a very different social order where there is a huge number of people who are part of who are contractors, which we've always had. That's since Revolutionary War, but huge. Yeah. And the power of corporate America has grown exponentially. Yes. So you have a very different order of things in Washington, D.C. And I think that people don't know how to put their hands around any of this stuff or what to do. And one of the reasons I think that I said earlier that President Barack Obama is going to win again is in some ways precisely because he is the first African-American president, because it is a visceral emotional response that people have, especially in communities of color. We want that they're not going to let Barack the conflict inside communities has to do with not want to let go this first black family in the White House.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, that's just, you know, because things sometimes are inexplicable. Yeah. They're not made out of logic. We don't always move on logic.
Yeah.
And the other part is that this large minority of white Americans who voted for Barack Obama feel the same way, given the history of this nation. The question is whether or not they will come out in droves and work their tail off like they did in 2008. One of the things that – what's his name said? Seth Meyers at the end of the White House Correspondents' Dinner, which I just cracked up when he – it was very funny all night long. He looked at Barack Obama and said, I don't think any Republican out there can beat you. And I agree with him in 2012. Nobody out there right now that can beat Barack Obama. The only person who can beat you, Barack Obama – the only person who can beat you – is this guy Obama in 2008. I think you'd like him.
That's the hotness.
That was
that's dope. Use that one.
410-319-8888 is the number here. Your thoughts. Woo. Michael, you're on the air.
Good evening. How's everybody?
Doing very well, man. Welcome.
Chilling.
Thank you for taking my call. I listen to your show every day.
Thank you.
My comment is that the president is, oh, man, I wouldn't be able to do his job to save my soul. He's cleaning up after, I'm not going to say one of the worst presidents, but
you can say
Bush wasn't our best president. And he's cleaning up after this guy. He's cleaning that up, and he's trying to implement his policies. And, you know, he's trying to juggle, and it's very hard, you know. And nobody wants to understand that this man has a tough job to do, a very tough job to do.
Let me ask you a question.
Yeah, go ahead.
What do you think about the issue of police brutality in black communities?
Oh no, I don't like that at all.
Okay, so what if somebody told you, well, you know, police, they got a hard job. All they're dealing with is the worst dregs of society. Yeah. Every day, that's all they're seeing. You got to excuse them. What would you say to that?
What would I say to that?
Yeah.
Professionalism at all time. I work in that profession myself. So.
Oh yeah. I have the same response about Obama.
You have to stay in control because police officers, and I would say anybody in law enforcement, is walking a thin line between law enforcement and criminal.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
You know,
yeah.
If you do the right thing, you're okay. If you do the wrong thing, then you're going to jail.
Mm-hmm.
Plain and simple. And I'm not going to say the president is walking that line, but he has a tough job. You know, he's trying to – he can't make everybody happy. It's not possible to make everybody happy. But he is the president, and I stand behind him 100%.
Yeah.
And I will vote for him again.
Yeah.
And also, I want to say – about the death of Osama bin Laden was a good thing, but the rejoicing, that's not us. That's not who we are.
Yeah.
You know, that's not who we are, you know.
Or that's not who we should be, right?
That's not who we should be, and the Bible tells us, do not rejoice in another man's damn coming or bad times.
You
don't rejoice in things like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
But thank you, gentlemen. I love the show, and you guys are good.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you so much for being part of the show.
Yeah, I mean, so I understand what he's saying. I understand what he's saying perfectly, right? But the thing is he chose that job. Yep, it's hard as hell, and he's the first president in my lifetime that I could look at and say, man, this guy is better than me. But with that, he chose that job.
I mean, we'll go back to the phones here, but I'm going to say he made a mistake, I think, from the very beginning of his presidency. I know we're bouncing around a bit here, but I think I just want to throw this out here. And actually, this is not my original thought. This thought came from Sherrilyn Ifill when we were having coffee a few weeks back.
You didn't tell me about it. I'll be hanging out. Don't be letting me know.
you couldn't get up to him, and you probably didn't have a car that day. You would never made it anyhow.
Yeah, okay. Right. Why are you trying to trip on public transportation?
Because it wouldn't have gotten to where we were. but we were talking, and she said that one of the problems, that one of the things that Barack Obama did, made a mistake in the beginning, was taking on health care. That if he had said to America, we're going to say no more foreclosures for the next year in the United States of America, ending them. And banks, if you want us to bail you out right now, here's the form you have to fill out. Come talk to us about what you're going to do with the money. This is what we want in return for the money we're going to give you. If he had said that, America would have turned around and stayed with him. That's what, as she pointed out, these kind of older white voters from Pennsylvania who voted for him wanted him to say.
Yeah.
And that she said something really interesting. She said when her mother died of cancer, breast cancer, when she was very young.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, their father never said, I wish I had more money for health care. He always said, I have a paycheck and a roof over my head. That's the number one priority.
Yeah, I resemble that remark.
You know, and that.
Yeah. What I'd say is, I agree with her. I'd modify it slightly. I say the big mistake wasn't the issue he chose, although that was a big mistake. The big mistake was letting all those people, letting Organizing for America die. Right, that network of hundreds of thousands of people who organized to get him elected. He had a choice to either let them work as kind of an autonomous unit that he could have organized kind of like a progressive Tea Party, but with a much greater size and a lot more teeth, or he could let them die and go the private route, and he let them die. That was the huge mistake, and then that kind of, I think, structured everything else that happened.
Because then the corporate world took over the argument on health care, and it was all over.
Yeah, that's it.
410-319-8888. Hank, you're on the air.
How you doing today, young man?
All right, man, how are you doing?
I am blessed, right? This situation with Bin Laden, right? I think that he shouldn't have killed him just for the simple fact that if you didn't kill him and brought him in for somebody, even if you didn't charge him with any crimes, right, at least they can say it's not a conspiracy. Now, they're going to say, okay, well, you killed him, or he ain't dead, or you killed him because you knew that this was already set up, and that's why you had to have him killed. And this might not have been something that Obama wanted, but this was something that needed to be done, right? Two, most this vote for him because of his color is completely idiotic, right? And if he doesn't give you, okay, he said, what did my man say? He has the bully fit up there. He can't use that because of the fact when he had the chance when they was fighting him over health care, he didn't use it then. When they was fighting him over with the financial situation,
yeah.
He didn't use it then.
Yeah.
So to use it now, right, would be pulling out a water gun, right? It would hold no validity whatsoever.
Oh, wow.
It would be flat.
Yeah.
Right? To vote for him and him not give you a strict agenda of, look, this is what I can get accomplished,
yeah,
will only forever hurt any female, anybody of color who comes behind him,
yeah,
right? And that's my opinion and my view, right? If somebody up there comes to me and says, hey, and this is how I strictly believe, Mr. Steiner, if somebody comes to me with a better line than he got, they got my vote. Right? Because in politics, they all tell you what they're going to do and not what they can actually get accomplished.
Yeah.
Always
that's
good to hear.
That's my opinion.
All right, Hank. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's real talk. The only thing I would push him on is I don't think they could have brought – they could – I don't – if they'd have brought Osama here, it would have been incredibly difficult. There are a number of legal hurdles that they wouldn't have been able to get around as far as whether to try him, how to try him, et cetera. It would have been, I think that would have been better in some ways for democracy, but, you know, he'd be, yeah, that would create a storm the likes of which we really haven't seen in as far as military courts and the like.
Right. But I mean,
but everything else, you know, everything else is kind of on point.
If they had done that, they probably would have taken him to some place like Guantanamo.
Yeah, right, right. And then, you know, and then what do you, you know, what do you do? How do you try him? You know, how do you, you know, he's not like the head of a sovereign nation. He's not a, I mean, I don't know. So I think that's why they did what they did.
410-319-8888. And Glenn, you're on the air.
Hey, I think that what a lot of people fail to realize. Well, I voted for Barack Obama, and a wee bit disappointed about certain things. You know, given the technology we have now, every year it's something new comes up with the Twitter and all these kind of things. 24-hour news and analysis by these so-called political pundits. The vitriol that we've seen, like we've never seen before.
Yeah.
And then within 2 years, he's, whether you agree with him or not, he got a health care program in. He brought the GM and did the cost of Clunker, which was a bump for the economy. He's turned around GM. He's helped in the real estate mortgage industry. He's straightened that out. He's put in regulations to make it easier for oversight of these organizations, and including the financial industry. I challenge anyone to, and in 2 years, whether you agree with it or not, he's done all these things. Look at Bush in 8 years. Tell me what he's done. How many list of things? Look at Reagan, even Clinton. So I think whether you agree with him or not, it's part of what he's done. You know, a lot of people, a lot of African Americans are upset with the one option thing with the health care, but he got a health plan through. So when you look at all those things in just 2 years, I can't think of a president in the last 20 years that's done so much in just 2 years.
Yeah, I'd agree.
I mean, listen, whether you agree with it or not, all those things I've mentioned, he's done.
I'd agree, but I just have one question. Do you know anybody who's gone through foreclosure that's had their loan permanently modified because of the result of Obama?
Yes, I think that.
You know somebody.
Well, this is what I'm saying. Overall, in general, I think the real estate industry, there's been some improvements. He put things in place so that people would not He slowed down some of the foreclosures based on the policy he put in place. I mean, he's made some actions. He's made decisions about it. Now, like I said, whether you agree with it or not, we both know he's done something. We can say he's done this with the real estate, with the mortgage industry. He's done this with the financial industry. He's brought in health care. He's taken GM and he's turned that around. And now they're seeing profits at some of these companies. Whether you agree with it or not,
he's done stuff.
Done all those things. And can you? Bush was 8 years.
Yeah.
So all I'm saying is, when you look at what this man's done, whether you agree or not, he was a president of action.
Yeah.
Something like we've not seen in 20 years.
Yeah, I got you. I feel you.
So this has been
my comment, man.
Thank Glenn. I appreciate being part of the show. It's been a really interesting conversation with folks from all across the board. Yes, it is about that time.
It's over already?
Well, we got about 2 minutes left.
Oh, you're killing me, man.
You can wax for 2 more minutes if you'd like to. I'm not going to run you off just yet. Actually, a minute and a half. Maybe not.
Nah, man. Listen, I just want to give a shout out. You know, we're doing this thing tomorrow. They've been having the ads about Manning Marable, discussion about Manning Marable and his book on Malcolm X. It should be a really, really great discussion. If you guys are in the area, come down to the library here. It's at 7 o'clock. I'm really looking forward to it.
Dr. Les Spence, Cheryl Lynn Eiffel, Michael Eric Dyson.
And Melissa Harris-Perry.
Will be there.
She's the big time one. You know, be honest, real talk. When Mark Steiner, he told me about this like a month ago, and I was with it. But then when he gave me all the names, I'm like, damn, I don't know how we're going to be able to hold a mic between all four of us. I mean.
It's my job.
How long does it go?
2 hours. And a live audience.
Woo,
and the books will be there.
And with question and answer from the audience.
And C-SPAN will be shooting it.
So now I got to get a haircut.
Well, you got to look a little bit good, man. You just can't come like you are now. So
I'll be all right.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Lester Spence.
Thank you very much. I enjoy this.
And we'll see you all tomorrow night at the Enoch Pratt Library. Join us at 7 o'clock. It'll be an incredible conversation. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Justin Levy and Cricket Harrison. We're engineered by Akisa Gunn. Our theme music is by Wal Matthews of King Cuts. Our intern today was Elizabeth Walker. To hear this show again, podcast any of our past shows, hear new additional interviews, and find out information about our guests and their work, visit us on the web at steinershow.org. And for Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.